Hello, my name is Dave Emery, and this is For the Record program number 682, Update on AIDS as a Man-Made Disease. This program is being recorded on July 26th of the year 2009. Again, please use the Spitfire website, spitfirelist.com, best source of information for this type of research. All of my work, my entire life's work, is available for download for free on that website. The descriptions for the Record shows often carry articles that were not carried in the original broadcast itself due to limitation of time. And so please use the Spitfire website. There's also a page to click on to support the work that I'm doing. And if you don't like what you're hearing, if you don't like what you're seeing in the world, no better way of fighting back than supporting the work I'm doing. Now, for decades, I have been doing work on AIDS as a man-made disease, deliberately engineered disease, specifically using genetic engineering. Very quickly, in order to begin this update on that subject, I'm going to review a passage from a book called A Higher Form of Killing about biological warfare that was co-authored by Robert Harris and Jeremy Paxman, published in soft cover by Hill and Wang in copyright 1982. Now, what's interesting is that that book has been reissued in, maybe 2000, 2002, and the passage that I'm about to read has been omitted. This after Bertelsmann, the publishing house for the SS in World War II, acquired Random House, who published it. Paxman and Harris conclude their book, again published 27 years ago, by noting that genetic research, the so-called search for the patriotic germ, or a germ that would only kill certain groups of people and leave other groups of people immune or uninfected or unaffected and due to certain genetic differences, that search was spurring interest at the Pentagon. They noted, as long ago as 1962, 40 scientists were employed at the U.S. Army Biological Warfare Laboratories on full-time genetics research. Many others, it was said, quote, appreciate the implications of genetics for their own work. And by the way, now I'm quoting from testimony, or will be quoting from testimony before the House subcommittee hearings for the defense budget for fiscal year 1969. So we're going back 40 years in time for this testimony. Again, returning to the passage from A Higher Form of Killing, the implications were made more specific that genetic engineering could solve one of the major disadvantages of biological warfare, that it is limited to diseases which occur naturally in the world. Quote, within the next 5 to 10 years, and again, we're talking about 1969 here, it would probably be possible to make a new, infective microorganism which could differ in certain important respects from any known disease-causing organisms. Most important of these is that it might be refractory to the immunological and therapeutic processes upon which we depend to maintain our relative freedom from infectious disease, unquote. The authors go on to add, the possibility that such a supergerm, unquote, may have been successfully produced in a laboratory somewhere in the world since, in the years since that assessment was made, is one which should not be too readily cast aside, unquote. And by the way, the authors themselves have a background with, among other institutions, Port and Down, which is the top British Biological Warfare Research Center. And, of course, in this time period, in within 5 to 10 years, of 1969, just such a disease did make its appearance to the medical community. That disease, of course, is AIDS, and it breaks down or is refractory to the immunological and therapeutic processes upon which we depend to maintain our relative freedom from infectious disease. Refractory in medicine means resistance to, and in physics and biotechnology, it means to break down. When a prism refracts light, it breaks it down into its component spectra. I note this, and time permitting, I will review some of the information linking elements of the national security establishment with AIDS research. They've been present at all phases of this. Again, time permitting, AFA program 16 and subsequent For the Record shows basically provide a very complete document about just that. And again, I'll summarize some of that, time permitting, later in the broadcast. There was a fascinating development earlier this year A physician in a clinic in Foley, Alabama, of all places, who in turn had attended a very prestigious medical conference in Philadelphia, has noted that there has now been an example of the use of stem cell research to apparently provide a cure for HIV/AIDS. And what is so fascinating is that this, first of all, this work was done by a German physician, a doctor in Germany, and that what he did was to take stem cells from someone who contained the CCR5 Delta 32 mutation and grew them and then injected that into a leukemia patient who also was HIV positive and was no longer able to take his HIV medicine because of the leukemia, and he then became HIV free. Now, in For the Record 606, I went into great detail about the CCR5 Delta 32 mutation. It appears to provide immunity to infection by HIV. It has been noted by researchers that, first of all, this genetic mutation is primarily present, and according to some, exclusively present, not only in the white race only, or people who, well, basically in the white race only, but Northern Europeans, people of Northern European and Scandinavian extraction, i.e., quote, Aryans, unquote. Now, some of those people have crossbred since. I mean, they've had relationships and produced progeny by other ethnic groups. So it's a bet that at least some CCR5-32 genes are present. But apparently, to maintain the immunity from AIDS, you have to have, it's a recessive gene, you have to be purebred Northern European, and that can give you, if you have the right genes, CCR5 Delta 32 immunity to AIDS infection. Basically, it is the Aryan gene, and it provides immunity to HIV/AIDS. It is not present in any other ethnic group. No other race has it, and it is primarily, and according to some researchers, exclusively present in Northern Europeans. It was apparently something that provided immunity to infection by the plague. I would note that there's also a new body of thinking within the medical community that the plague, the Black Death that ravaged Europe for hundreds of years, was not actually bubonic plague, but rather a hemorrhagic infection, a viral hemorrhagic infection, which had been brought back from Africa or the Middle East by voyagers or traders who had ventured into that area, possibly even at one point some of the later crusaders. And that's a new body of thinking, because Ebola and also Marburg fever are viral hemorrhagic fevers. Marburg first discovered in a laboratory in Germany. But CCR5 Delta 32 appeared to provide immunity to infection by the Black Plague. It helped avoid people dying of plague, and it provides immunity to HIV/AIDS. And using stem cells from a CCR5 Delta 32 individual, a German physician has apparently created the first HIV/AIDS cure. It'll be interesting to see if this ultimately gets marketed by one of the underground Reich/Bormann capital network companies, such as Merck, or one of the companies that grew out of the old IG Farben complex. But that remains to be seen. However, note the following. This is from the website BaldwinCountyNow.com. It's an article by Bob Morgan, May 27, 2009. It's titled, Local Physician, HIV/AIDS Cure Getting Little Publicity. Subtitled, Dr. Awadesh Gupta said medical, quote, politics, unquote, could be reason. Stateline, Foley, Alabama, and it reads, a Foley physician said what appears to be the first case of HIV/AIDS cure in the world is getting little mention in the media. Dr. Awadesh K. Gupta, medical director at Foley Walk-In Medcare, said he first heard of the medical breakthrough in April when he attended the annual conference of the American College of Physicians in Internal Medicine in Philadelphia. It's a conference Gupta tries to attend every year. Quote, this is the most prestigious organization of physicians in internal medicine and is responsible for certifying postgraduate training in internal medicine. It is also one of the oldest, he said. According to Gupta, who has been practicing medicine in the South Baldwin area since 1997, the cure was first reported in early 2008 by a group of physicians from Germany at the annual conference on, quote, retroviruses and opportunistic infections, unquote, in Boston. The New England Journal of Medicine, one of the most prestigious medical journals in the world, finally published the report in its February 12, 2009 issue, Gupta said. So why has the news of the first case of HIV/AIDS cure received so little attention where the public is concerned? Quote, I can't be sure as to why so little publicity, unquote, Gupta said recently. My guess is that most scientific researchers are somewhat stunned that a clinician, not a research scientist, has been able to come up with the cure. Most of the big research money and big-name American institutions are somewhat embarrassed to acknowledge that the very first case of HIV cure is not coming from their institutions, unquote. The cure instead is coming from Charity University Hospital in Berlin, Germany, and the doctor is Gero Hütter, who works in the Department of Hematology, Oncology, and Transfusion Medicine at the same hospital. Asked about the reaction of attendees at the medical conference in Philadelphia as regarded the news of an HIV-AIDS cure, Gupta said, quote, "Unfortunately, because of the hectic schedule, I did not try to engage too many physicians. However, the doctor presenting this information seemed extremely excited about it," unquote. The next section of this article is titled, "An American Working in Berlin." As Gupta explains the case and cure in question, a 40-year-old American working in Berlin had been HIV positive for 10 years. The patient's HIV infection had been under control for years with conventional HAART regimen, highly active antiretroviral therapy. When the patient developed leukemia, however, a bone marrow transplant of stem cells was done using standard protocol, which Gupta said includes radiation therapy and chemotherapy prior to the transplant. Quote, "Remember, once you stop HIV drugs, the HIV viral count rises very rapidly, usually within a few days to a week," Gupta said. According to Gupta, Hütter, the German physician treating the American, deliberately chose a stem cell donor who had a gene mutation known as CCR5 Delta 32, unquote, rather than using the best matched donor. This next section, I'm going to repeat this next that last sentence for emphasis. According to Gupta, Hütter, the German physician treating the American, deliberately chose a stem cell donor who had a gene mutation known as CCR5 Delta 32, rather than using the best matched donor. Gupta said Hütter remembered research first observed in 1996. Research, Gupta said, is well known in the scientific community. The research found that certain gay men in the San Francisco area remained uninfected with HIV in spite of engaging in risky sexual activities. As it was later discovered, those men had the CCR5 Delta 32 gene mutation. Again, parenthetically, the Aryan gene, only present or almost exclusively present in purebred Northern Europeans and not present in any race other than the white race. Continuing, "As it turned out, the patient's stem cell transplant was a success," Gupta said, "even though the patient had to have a second stem cell transplant from the same donor when his leukemia relapsed. Quote, "This patient has been off all his HIV drugs for 2 years now," Gupta said. "He continues to show no detectable signs of HIV in all the known places HIV is detected, no signs of HIV in his blood, bone marrow, lymph nodes, intestines, or brain," unquote. Also, the patient's T-cell count remains normal. Thus, according to Gupta, within the limits of scientists' ability to detect HIV, it appears that this patient's HIV has been eradicated, unquote. Then talking about CCR5 Delta 32. The gene mutation CCR5 Delta 32 is found in white European populations, especially Northern Europeans and Scandinavians, according to Gupta, who was on the staff of South Baldwin Regional Medical Center and served as chief of medicine in 2008. Those who have this gene mutation from both parents are completely resistant to most common forms of HIV infection. You can get tested for it if you wish, he said. It is believed that this genetic mutation may have happened during long periods of smallpox, plague, and other pandemics that devastated European populations, unquote. While the American living in Berlin case is, in Gupta's words, the first case of confirmed cure of HIV in the world, unquote, he cites a 1989 case that is similar. Dr. John Rossi, currently at City of Hope Cancer Center in Durante, California, had a 41-year-old patient with AIDS and lymphoma. The patient underwent radiation and drug therapy in removing his bone marrow and receiving new cells from a donor. Whether the donor had the CCR5 Delta 32 gene mutation or not is not known, Gupta said. But when the patient died of his cancer at age 47, autopsy tests from 8 organs in the tumor revealed no HIV. I have no doubts that present-day high-tech stem cell transplantation from CCR5 Delta 32 donors can cure HIV, Gupta said. noting at the same time that the procedure is expensive at present and has significant risks of complications and a high mortality related to the procedure itself. So stem cell donors from CCR5 Delta 32, the Aryan gene that provides immunity to AIDS, apparently cures HIV infection when done properly. That is more than a little interesting. Not only, and again, and for the record, 606, I go into this at great length, but a couple of things I want to note. First of all, in an addendum to For the Record 606, this actually is from For the Record 643, but it's included in the description for 606. I noted that a recent piece of research indicated that in addition to the fact that that gene, the CCR5 Delta 32, present in purebred Northern Europeans exclusively, according to many researchers and overwhelmingly according to others, in addition to that, black people, people of African extraction, have a genetic susceptibility, a particular genetic susceptibility to HIV infection. This particular article is from the San Francisco Chronicle of July 17th of 2008. It's by Sabin Russell, titled, "Newfound Genetic Clue to HIV Rate Among Blacks." Quote, "An international team of AIDS scientists has discovered that a gene variant common in blacks protects against certain types of malaria, but increases susceptibility to HIV infection by 40%. Researchers, keen to find some biological clues to explain why people of African descent are bearing a disproportionate share of the world's AIDS cases, suspect this subtle genetic trait, found in 60% of American blacks and 90% of Africans, might partly explain the difference. 10% of the world's population lives in sub-Saharan Africa, but that region accounts for 70% of the men, women, and children living with HIV infection. In the United States, African Americans make up 12% of the population, but account for half of newly diagnosed HIV infections." So, again, the CCR5 Delta 32, present in, quote, Aryans, unquote, helped to provide immunity to the plague. And this particular genetic susceptibility that black people have to AIDS helped to provide protection against certain types of malaria. So, again, note the ethno-specific, or to a certain extent, nature of this particular disease. Note also that the primary people who were getting it are people who are viewed as outgroups by the far right, black people, gays, and intravenous drug users, all viewed as altogether expendable. We're going to review some more information from For the Record at 606 in just a couple of minutes. There was another piece of research, in all probability spurious, but interesting under the circumstances. Science Daily was among the papers that carried this particular report from July 23rd of 2009. Chimpanzees affected with SIV do develop and die from AIDS, contrary to prevailing view. It reads in part, "Although the AIDS virus, HIV-1, entered the human population through chimpanzees, scientists have long believed that chimpanzees don't develop AIDS." By the way, this is just flat out wrong. In fact, it is not clear exactly how the AIDS virus first infected humans, but the research here is spurious. I'll explain that in a minute. Continuing, but a new study from an international team, including University of Minnesota professors Ann Pusey and Michael Wilson, shows that chimpanzees infected with SIV, simian immunodeficiency virus, the precursor to HIV-1, do contract and die from AIDS. The discovery is published in the July 23rd issue of Nature. The authors report that infected chimpanzees in their study group were 10 to 16 times more likely to die than those who were uninfected. The team also found that infected females were less likely to give birth, and infants born to infected mothers were unlikely to survive. The virus, they learned, was transmitted sexually and through mother's milk. Over the 9-year study period, 10 to 20% of the 94 chimpanzees were infected at any one time. The finding opens up new opportunities for research. "We hope this will lead to a better understanding of the virus that will benefit both humans and chimpanzees," said Jane Goodall, whose focus has shifted in recent years from research to conservation of chimpanzees and their habitats. The study focused on chimpanzees at Gombe National Park, Tanzania, where Goodall and her colleagues have studied chimpanzees for nearly 50 years. Researchers used data that Pusey, a longtime associate of Goodall's, archived at the Jane Goodall Institute Center for Primate Studies at the University of Minnesota to understand how SIV is transmitted among chimpanzees and how the virus affects chimpanzee survival and reproduction. Virologist Beatrice Hahn at the University of Alabama led the Nature study, which involved Pusey and her colleagues. And please note that Beatrice Hahn led this study. In one of our visits with Ed Haslam, author of Dr. Mary's Monkey, the successor volumes to Mary Ferry and the successor volume to Mary Ferry and the Monkey Virus, we noted that this was an entirely spurious finding. Dr. Hahn, who may be perfectly innocent in this, got her findings from an Air Force laboratory in Los Alamos, New Mexico, in which the doctor was injecting chimpanzees with AIDS, basically HIV. The chimpanzees were kept in circumstances replicating natural conditions, i.e. the alpha male would have sex with all of the females. And it was then discovered, yep, sure enough, AIDS was present in chimpanzees. Well, folks, when you're injecting chimpanzees with AIDS and keeping them in natural conditions when the alpha male has sex with all the females, it shouldn't be at all surprising to find that, we found AIDS in we found HIV in chimpanzees. So this is altogether spurious to say that HIV first entered the human population through chimpanzees. Now, what they're talking about in that article, though, is SIV, simian immunodeficiency virus, which, interestingly enough, was first discovered in primate laboratories in the United States. This is a virus, it's a retrovirus, a relative of AIDS. It destroys the immune system of primates. According to most research, it is native to the green monkey of Africa, and in turn, it does not appear to harm the green monkey, but is devastating to other primates. That, according to many bodies of research. But in any event, the SIV was first discovered, the simian immunodeficiency virus was first discovered in primate laboratories in the United States. And here's an article from the University of California newsroom. It's from August 27th of 2002. 20 years of monkey research boosts AIDS knowledge, and it's about the discovery at the UC Davis Center for Comparative Medicine, or rather at the California National Primate Research Center, the discovery of SIV, excuse me. Research on AIDS-like disease in monkeys continues to help scientists understand problems such as how HIV causes AIDS, how the virus hides from the immune system, and how the disease might be prevented or treated 2 decades after the human and monkey diseases were identified. Quote, "These animals have been indispensable for understanding how the virus works and in working toward vaccines," unquote, said Murray Gardner, professor emeritus of medical pathology at the UC Davis Center for Comparative Medicine. And then he notes here, skipping down, "More than 20 years ago, scientists at the UC Davis Primate Center were confronted with a mysterious and deadly outbreak of infections in their monkeys. Showing signs of weakened immune systems, the monkeys were succumbing to a variety of infections that normally did not cause disease." Skipping down, "Scientists would later discover that the monkey disease called simian AIDS was caused by the simian immunodeficiency virus, or SIV, a close relative of the human immunodeficiency virus, or HIV, that causes human AIDS. The striking similarities between the human and simian disorders and the viruses that cause them enabled scientists to gain otherwise unobtainable insights into the origins and progression of human AIDS work that continues today." Goes on to say that HIV was first identified in 1983 and SIV in 1985. Now, what is so interesting is that SIV was first discovered in laboratories when it basically began jumping from one primate species that it did not harm too much to others in which it was utterly deadly. I would note in that regard that the Third Reich's experiments proceeded roughly like AIDS. They began testing on humans, began experimenting on apes, I should say, and then ultimately progressed to humans. And that is the rough progression that we have seen with AIDS. That is discussed, excerpting text from the book The Crime and Punishment of I.G. Farben by Joseph Borkin. We covered that in For the Record 606. It's present in the description. Now, what is so interesting is that one of the people who was of tremendous interest to researchers, to the Allies, was a fellow named Franz Lizal Zacharias, a German intelligence agent stationed in Spain, and reprising some information from 606 from the AP, March 31st of 97. "One tortured French citizens in ice baths. Another was a Gestapo agent who packed bombs into crates of Spanish oranges bound for England. They were just two of 104 Nazi secret agents in Spain whom the Allies sought near the end of World War II. But Spanish dictator Francisco Franco, Adolf Hitler's ally, refused to hand them over, according to an investigative report by El País, a Madrid newspaper. Another agent was Franz Lisow Zacharias, whose job for Hitler's Abwehr spy agency was to obtain monkeys and other animals from Spain's colonies in Africa. The animals used for experiments in Germany aimed at manufacturing killer diseases that were to be unleashed on concentration camp inmates, El País reported. And more about this from Spanish newspaper published lists of Nazis protected by Franco from Agence France-Presse. March 30th of 1997. Another German on the list is Franz Lisow Zacharias, who died in Madrid in 1992 at the age of 84. A member of the German military intelligence agency, the Abwehr, he had been in charge of obtaining animals in Spanish territories in Africa for experiments in Germany, the Allies said. These experiments included spreading horrific diseases such as the plague in concentration camps, the newspaper said. So among the things they were experimenting on was plague or perhaps hemorrhagic fever. The Third Reich would in all probability have known of that genre of medical theory that basically has it that the Black Plague was actually an African-born viral hemorrhagic fever. But the point is that CCR5 Delta 32 provides an immunity to that. What I wonder is because Franz Lisow Zacharias, who, as we looked at, in For the Record 606, was almost certainly an operative of the Underground Reich. He began a business in Spain in 1944, almost certainly as part of the going underground and the establishment of the Bormann Capital Network. He also was providing surveillance equipment to the Spanish intelligence services for many years. Franz Lisow Zacharias, in order to gain the primates to be shipped to the concentration camps for experimentation centers in Germany, almost certainly would have been keeping them in some sort of storage facility. One wonders whether perhaps a similar phenomenon that broke out in primate laboratories, in the United States, occurred in his laboratory. In fact, did he have simian immunodeficiency virus spreading there? That is, of course, food for thought and grounds for further research. And we are almost out of time, so I'm going to conclude. Again, I wonder if perhaps that was a thing that made him of such great interest to the Allies. I would note that doing experiments on apes is not a crime, let alone a war crime. And they certainly didn't need Franz Lisow Zacharias to teach them how to get monkeys from Africa. They bloody well knew how to do that themselves. So one can only wonder what it was that was so of such great interest. And in fact, did his monkeys start experiencing something very similar to what took place at UC Davis? And had he isolated tissue samples that were to prove invaluable later? Food for thought and grounds for further research. I would conclude by noting that in Ed Haslam, in his book, Dr. Mary's Monkey, has noted, SIV is the simian immunodeficiency virus, one of several monkey viruses known to have contaminated the polio vaccine. The more carcinogenic SV40 has received most of the press. SIV, a single-strand RNA virus, is considerably smaller than SV40. The technology of the 1950s was not able to filter SIV from the viral extracts. Further, researchers of the day did not consider retroviruses to be dangerous, so they basically ignored them. AIDS has taught us how dangerous retroviruses can be. If the project in New Orleans was intentionally exposing SV40 to radiation, they have exposed SIV to radiation at the same time. Simply stated, HIV-1 is a mutated form of SIV. Did the mutation which changed SIV into HIV-1 occur when SV40 was exposed to radiation? Was this the moment of conception of AIDS? Could this artificially induced mutation explain why HIV-1 is mutating so rapidly, why it is behaving so unnaturally, unquote? Well, again, read Ed Haslam's book, and you'll see them the milieu, my favorite word, that was doing that experimentation, and that was some milieu indeed. This concludes For the Record program number 682, update on AIDS as a man-made disease. This program is being recorded on July 26th of the year 2009. My name's Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.